And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Particularly great, Blake, because I don't know if you were paying attention or not, but we're going to be getting some news about the new college football video game. They're going to be dropping some information. The cover already got leaked over the past couple of days, but I'm pretty juiced up. I've been a little distracted with that today.
I find it hilarious that these social media wars that happen, you know, one social media, I say social media, but one publication reports the leak and then the other's like, how dare they? And then, you know, I just find it funny. Hey, how about this? Do your job.
Wait, who? What outlets are you talking about?
There are rivals of CBS that were mad that CBS leaked it. And all I'm going to say here is you better hold on to your own receipts and better be careful who you attack because, boy, things do happen in Nashville. That's all I'm going to say about that. But I did see it. Mm-hmm. I did see it. And you got to be careful when you go through Franklin, Tennessee. But regardless of that, I did see it. I do like that they're putting coaches on the cover. I like that Cignetti was on there.
Yeah. I did like it, too. Outside of the cover, there's some speculation on what some of the features are going to be. I've heard some things as well.
They got to change it. I'm sorry. They have got to change it. It should not take me that long to get to in the 90s. I'm tired of going to school. I don't need to go to school. I already have a bachelor's and a master's. I don't need to keep going to school. Joe, make it easier for your boy.
So you are probably going to hate some of the things that they put in there, but Bordeaux had posted something that it is revamped. And one of the things that's really cool that they did revamp, there's new positions in there that what he shared. And there's also like a draft play stock. No, tight end. You can play. Why would you want to play offensive line? That would be the most boring game mode that you could possibly play. You wouldn't do anything the whole time.
I would love
to be pushing guys over.
That. What do you think my entire life has been about, big guy?
Not in a video game. I'm not doing that.
Oh, I'd love to be a 5-star center. You know, just snapping the ball, checking lines of scrimmage, getting to the second level. Dominating and getting in zone reads, being a guard and being a counter. I mean, I don't think
that'd be very fun.
Hold on. Why would you? Well, you don't know. You've never been able to do it. Why are you discriminating versus fat people?
I'm not discriminating against fat people. The other thing that the
fat people, you're fat shaming, you're fat shaming offensive linemen, the most humble people, by the way, of all time, and you're fat shaming.
They also apparently the big thing is there's like draft stock was implemented in there. So it's a little bit more immersive in getting your player to the pros. So that I believe Road to Glory and I believe Dynasty are supposed to be completely revamped. There's a lot of new details that were put in it.
They keep saying that. Can I tell you something? If you really want to do something, can you make the Dynasty a little bit more realistic? Like, for example, I got an example. Like the recruiting stuff. I'm tired of having limits on how many dudes can come in a weekend. You know, like that's not how reality works. It's just not how reality works. Because you should be able to stack in good or bad. If you have a really good game, stack a player being there. It's how reality works. Also, another thing, I'm tired of seeing three of those teams in my dynasty playoff.
I don't know if that's so much that the game has too much parity to it, because that has been kind of an issue that you'll have like a lot of balance. I, in my Road to Glory last year, I was a running back. I transferred to Ohio State.
Of course,
and we lost like our first four games, and I still made the playoff with a 7-5 record and won a national championship with a 7-5 record. So, yeah. Well, I lost the first four games, and then the end of the stretch, like I beat three straight top 10 teams. So it, and Michigan was the number one team in the country. So I beat them. And so it was the number 12 seed. So yeah, I agree that, that's probably one thing. I do think that there's going to be a lot more details though in how recruiting works and just how like dynasty mode works in general. I think it's going to be, a lot more immersive.
You need to get better with here's my biggest complaint about the video game. Make the coaching thing easier. Because if I win two national titles, let me give an example. If you win two national titles, you can really only get as many coins to spend on for like three and mastering three specific things. Versus, as an example, I'll use Kurt Cignetti as this example. He just won one national title, and look how quickly things are flipping for him. So, like, if you were to win two national titles in the dynasty, you should probably unlock the whole damn thing. Does that make sense? Because I've been a coach, won two national titles, and I've only been able to master motivator, recruiter, and strategist or whatever it is. And I'm just like, I don't have enough coins and tokens to, you know, for the other stuff, you know, and like,
well, I don't think it wants you to be able to progress.
Like, I want to progress. I want to progress very quickly. I don't want to have to play 10 seasons.
I think you can change.
You can do it fastest.
Yeah, you forget what it was.
I
always
have to put it on fastest. I completely cheat, but yeah, it is what it is. It's going to be fun to have it in there. But nevertheless, we're live. Everyone do us a favor by hitting the like and share to all those groups. If you're on Facebook, and we're not on Facebook, not until June the 4th. If you're on YouTube, share to Facebook. Do us a favor. When you're on YouTube, subscribe down below. We greatly appreciate you doing that. If you're on Twitter's 24/7 Sports, do us a favor and hit that retweet button as well. And whenever you list a podcast, rate, review, and subscribe. Joe, we'll talk about Mike Leach and some Hall of Famers on the ballot. We'll talk about that. I would love, God rest his soul, I would have loved to hear what Mike Leach would have had to say about today's college athletics. We'll talk about him getting into the Hall of Fame, potentially. Three biggest games in college football in 2026. We'll get to that as well. And we'll do a Penn State deep dive. I almost said Iowa State deep dive because that's basically what it is. We just moved it to the Big Ten. But yeah, we will get to those three topics here today. Before we get to that, Joe, there's a lot of recruiting news that is about Andrew Ivins, Tom Loy, and the gang are doing a fantastic job over at 24/7 Sports. Use the promo code RJ60 at checkout to get 60% off your annual VIP membership. A lot of recruiting news through the summer months. There's a lot of official visits that are happening. Where are the top recruits going in the country? Tom Loy and company have you ready to go. So use that promo code RJ60 at checkout. Get 60% off your annual VIP membership and keep up with your favorite team today. All right, everyone do us a favor and hit the like and share. Subscribe down below. So, Joe, this is something that's kind of been in the works for a little bit of time now, as some amendments have been made to the College Football Hall of Fame. This came because Mike Leach was ineligible to make the College Football Hall of Fame because of his record. And I don't really think records should indicate if you belong or should belong in the Hall of Fame or not. But Mike Leach is now going to be on the ballot for the College Football Hall of Fame. And I got to be real with you. I think he's, quite frankly, a first ballot Hall of Famer. Because of just, it's not necessarily the record. He didn't win a national title as a head coach. But, Joe, he legitimately changed college football in, if we want to be honest, NFL football as we know it, implementing the air raid, which is a system that I played under Dennis Rowland and Hal Mumme when he brought it into Southeastern. But he completely changed the game in the late 90s while at Kentucky, then going to Oklahoma, then going to Texas Tech. Joe, what are your thoughts? Not only just Mike Leach, we'll start off with, but maybe some other guys that are on the ballot as well.
Yeah, I think they hit the nail on the head here why they did need to make the adjustment for the qualification to get into the Hall of Fame. And Mike Leach was a no-brainer. He didn't coach a major program to a national championship, but his impact on how other programs evolved after he built this coaching tree of air raid coaches, it has completely transformed the game. Every single major program with a potent offense has some sort of iteration of the air raid, using space, using a lot of similar concepts in order to find ways to win. If we didn't have Mike Leach, we would not have football as we know it. Maybe we'd still be running a lot of heavy run concepts and being very downhill. We wouldn't be throwing the ball around the yard the way that we do right now in college football. And to your point, it's starting to leak its way into the NFL as well. I actually did a video on Mike Leach on my other YouTube channel where I've been kind of doing some deeper long form stuff.
I love those, by the way. I hate you, but I love those.
Thank you, Mike. That means a lot. The Mike Leach video that I did that was really fun because it was going back and recounting some of the ridiculous rants that he always had. Even if he didn't get in, he would still go down as being one of the most memorable coaches just because of who he was and because of the infectious personality that he had. Outside of that, though, just a couple names that you had asked about, like other notable guys. The guys that I wrote down, which we can get to. Kayvon Austin. Cam Newton was in there. RG3. Percy Harvin. Those were the players that caught my attention.
To start off with Mike Leach. I'm old enough to remember when Mike Leach took the job, okay, at Texas Tech. I also remember when he came and did a coaching clinic in Hammond, Louisiana after leaving Texas Tech. And I would have loved to have heard a lot of his thoughts about college football. And I didn't agree with him on anything. He was the first one, if you remember, 4.5 years ago that said that the playoff is ultimately going to expand to 24 teams. If you remember at SEC Media Days, Mike Leach said, listen, you can call me crazy now. This is how it's going to work. They're going to riddle you with 12. They're going to riddle you with 16. But ultimately, everyone's going to settle on 24. By the way, does that sound familiar? Because I'm old enough to remember when he goes to a podium and everybody's like, oh, you know Mike Leach. He's crazy. He did a 20-minute monologue about how coffee's horrible. And then he said the biggest thing that no one wanted to talk about, he told you everything that happened at spring meetings that was supposed to be that no one really talked about. He also called out Greg Sankey without calling out Greg Sankey, and Greg Sankey could never find him because this man's teaching law schools and law classes at Washington State. Here's the truth. He changed the game. He changed the game forever. When Kentucky went through what they went through in the late 90s, going into the 2000s, and then implementing the system that would win Oklahoma a national championship. By the way, Joe, the last national championship that Oklahoma has won was the principles that they were running then. To throw this in there, if you remember, for 2 decades, they tried to replicate everything Mike Leach under Bob Stoops. He tried to replicate that every single year. They could never do it. And his imprint is in more of the game offensively than anywhere. RPOs. Like, where did RPOs come from? I mean, they came from a lot of different places and a lot of different scenarios and situations. The first time that I remember an RPO being run was legitimately at Texas Tech in 2008. So I look at this and just say to myself, there's one thing that you can look at Mike Leach and say, look, his coaching career as a head coach didn't go as planned, but his team's always got better. And I don't think that he should have been moved on from at Texas Tech, to be blunt with you, but that's neither here nor there. Regardless of that, he is a Hall of Famer in my book, mainly because of how much he impacted the game and because of all of the crazy interviews he'd give. And I know that's not necessarily something that should be a qualifier, but in this regard, I think it should. In reference to players, Joe, Cam Newton's number one. The truth of the matter is that Cam Newton is number one on that list before anybody else gets on there. Now, in reading this article from just a moment ago, I am worried about this because some people were talking about, you know, the whole situation with Cam Newton in his senior year and taking money and all of that stuff. Well, he's won a Heisman that same year, and you didn't do anything about it then. Him, RG3, I think AJ Hawk is on there. But if there's any, if you had to look at one player to get in or one person to get in, His name's Cam Newton. You can make the argument he was the best quarterback that we maybe have ever seen. Everybody talks about the year, but no other quarterback has done what he's done in carrying the team the way that he carried that Auburn team. So if there's any person for me that I look at and say, that guy, number one, hand over heels, no doubt, it is Cam Newton. RG3, I think, belongs in there. AJ Hawk belongs in there. And other players, you talked about Percy Harvin. Joe, I'm old enough to remember where Percy Harvin struck fear in everybody. That whole Florida team struck fear in everybody. But a lot of big names on that list.
Yeah, the Cam Newton comment is spot on. I mean, there's no question on him getting into the Hall of Fame. And he should be somebody that gets in immediately. He's one of the most memorable players in my lifetime for his impact and his role in Auburn winning a national championship. If we're just talking about, if it actually would be a really fun list to compile of single-handed performances that carried a team, like which players were the most important for their teams, not who were the best players in college football history, but who were for the most important for their teams.
Oh, it's
Cam Newton. Cam Newton would have to be at the top of that list, and he would be towards the top of all-time quarterbacks. That Auburn team was fine. They probably would have been a bowl team. They had a couple of really good players, but Cam Newton made some of the craziest plays to keep them alive and to help them win that title. It's going to go down as one of the greatest seasons ever. 100, 200 years from now, we'll still be talking about how freakish Cam Newton was. The other guy that I would bring up that I feel like is an absolute, like, needs to get in, Percy Harvin's a good pick for that conversation, considering he was a two-time first-team All-American and won two national titles. But, dude, I mean, Tavon Austin's got to be an immediate first-ballot guy. Like,
I agree.
The legacy that he carries.
I don't think he belongs in there over Percy, though.
I think that Percy Harvin was incredibly impactful for Florida and was great for Florida. Tavon Austin was the best player on that West Virginia team. He is the only player in college football history to have 3,000 yards receiving and 1,000 yards rushing. And the greatest highlight tape of all time.
Okay, there it is.
I mean, that's got to get brought up. That's got to get brought up for we're going to talk about Tavon Austin.
Yeah, but Percy was doing that against national championship level teams every week. He's doing the same stuff.
But it doesn't always have to be like that. It doesn't always have to be like, who were you doing it against?
Doing against Rudy Putek versus doing it against Ohio State as an example when they played, or Oklahoma when they played. I mean, like, that's ridiculous. I mean having the amount of rushing yards, rushing touchdowns, receiving yards, receiving touchdowns that he had, he would, Joe, that whole Florida offense also changed the game. I mean, they were running a spread triple option. I mean, like, legitimately, they would motion him back in the backfield, jet sweeps, and then you had to respect the jet sweep or putting him in motion or putting him in the backfield. And then they ran the veer the entire time because Tebow would keep it and run. I mean, they were the most fearful. I still to this day believe that they might have been that 2018 might have been the most fearful team that I can remember, just because of the Tebow factor and what they had. I mean, I know people say, what about Aaron Hernandez? Him too. Lewis Murphy. I mean, that whole team was they were insane. But, you know, I lean more Percy Harvin, but to your point, Tavon Austin, it was a human highlight reel. I mean, he's got to be in there too. Is there anybody on there that you think's borderline that, like, you're just like, man, this dude should get in, but maybe I might be in the minority of it?
Not that I can recall. I mean, there were a lot of just general strong arguments for a lot of these guys. Yeah, and there wasn't really anyone that I think fit that criteria. It was a pretty good list. Melvin Gordon is now eligible this year, which is huge.
I think Melvin Gordon deserves to be in.
Heupel's eligible. Sebastian Janikowski got to get Seabass in.
Heupel can't get in.
Why?
Because he can't control his own players now.
He's not a bad coach because he's an overhyped coach.
I got one that I think is very biased of me. Mm-hmm. Patrick Peterson better be first ballot.
Yeah, he was on that list as well. Marshawn's on there too. I think that Patrick Peterson was kind of on the outside of the list of names that there's 60 plus guys on here that I wrote down that were notable. D'Amico Ryans also on here. Terrell Suggs.
D'Amico Ryans was insane. Ryans was insane. He started that whole Bama legacy. I mean, if we're being honest, I mean, there's so many good ones, man. So many good ones.
Manti Te'o's another one too.
He's gonna bring his girlfriend.
I don't think his girlfriend's coming. But he would be someone who I would think should get in within the next couple of years or however the timeline works. He was unreal on that national championship runner-up team, except in the national championship game.
I don't disagree. He probably deserves to be in. But if I'd probably go Peterson over him just as a career. I mean, because Peterson, I mean, the punt and kick returns, I mean, that's I mean, that's just in and of itself. And I think both of them deserve to get in, and we'll see. But going to be really, really interesting. All right, let's move forward here. Joe, we get to finally start inching ourselves a little bit closer to something that you and I are yearning to talk about. On-field games. So as we don't have on-field games yet, we have a pretty strict policy of not talking about games this far out. But regardless of that, what do you believe is going to be the three most, I don't want to say biggest, because I also want to talk about impact. What are the three most impactful games going into the 2026 season? Because I feel like that there are a lot. Now, in college football, storylines will write themselves on their own. Like a couple years ago, we had no idea that Indiana versus, any team would have been a big deal.
Well, Indiana versus Oregon in the beginning of the year is a really good example. That completely transformed the trajectory of Indiana.
I was really talking about year one for Cignetti there, because they came out of nowhere. I also think, like, even you can talk about last year to an extent. I don't really think a lot of people saw Oklahoma coming and making a playoff the way that they did. I mean, not with the schedule that they had. Mm-hmm. So there could be a lot more. But you know a team that nobody saw coming? Not even there. What about Ole Miss? There are teams that we look at here that you could say, well, as we get into the season, there are more impactful games here. But when you get into it, what are the most three that you're looking forward to and you think are the biggest and have the most impact?
Yeah, I'm going to start with the first one being week two, Ohio State versus Texas. I think that game has the biggest impact for shaping what both team seasons are going to be like. Ohio State and Texas this year, unlike last year, they both have really tough schedules. Two of the toughest schedules in the country. I would argue that Ohio State has the toughest Big Ten schedule. Texas has the toughest SEC schedule, but there's a lot of hype and expectations for these teams to contend and to get to a national championship and to win their conferences. Winning a game like this in week two has the opportunity to completely change the trajectory for what these teams can accomplish. It's a huge momentum builder. But here's the biggest part with this. Last year, we got a taste of it. We got a little bit of a taste of what Ohio State versus Texas could be, but neither quarterback was really ready for the moment. And I think that now, with both teams having a ton of turnover on the defensive side of the ball and the offense is stepping up, that we're going to get some more fireworks. I think that with Arch and Julian Sand having improved and developed into the players that they are now, having a full season under their belts, is going to make this game even more compelling. Last year was just a little bit of a tease on what we can expect. I think that this is going to be the full form of this battle.
All right. Here's what I'm going to do with Ohio State. Okay. I'm not picking a game with them. I'm picking games, plural. Where I agree with you, The Ohio State-Texas game is going to be a massive one because here is just the truth. Everybody calls me an SEC homer. The SEC has got to find a Texas for the SEC has got to find a way to win this, or you know the narrative. See, I look at impactful games and biggest games in a little bit of a different light than maybe most. What have we heard the last, or really just this whole offseason? Oh, the SEC's down. Oh, they're losing. Oh, they're losing. You got to beat them. You might be one of, if not the best team in the SEC, and if you lose, you better not get blown out. Okay? It better be more competitive than it was a season ago. I do think it's bigger from a conference versus conference standpoint, and that's what makes it big, right? Screw the teams for just a moment. Look at all of the changing landscape. Joe, what do we say if Ohio State falls in week two to Texas? Uh-oh. Is the SEC rising? Or do we look down at this and say, told you the Big Ten still on top? And that's how, because, Joe, I said this a year ago, that the impact of the conferences in this game would be more impactful than the actual teams. What happened? Everybody said Arch Manning sucked and the Big Ten rules college football. It had nothing to do with the teams. It had nothing to do with Ohio State not being able to run the football. It had nothing to do with Texas being able to run the football. The narrative was around the conferences. And I'm like, what are we doing? With that being said, for Ohio State, pick one without about to say. In a month, this is their schedule in October and November, but it's in a four-week span. They have at Indiana, then a bye week, then at USC, and then Oregon. So I just got done talking about narratives for just a moment, okay? What's the narrative? If they're 1-2, if they're 2-1, God forbid they lose early in the season to Texas. Joe, that is an absolutely insane slate. Here's where I sit. I think they go into Indiana, and I think they go into potentially USC and I think they'll beat Indiana, but I think they're going to lose one of these three games because that's too tough of a slate to go undefeated in today's college football. Mm. But I look at them and say, what is the impact in that month every single week for Ohio State? Because what happens if they lose to Indiana? Uh-oh, Indiana's running the Big Ten now, and then they have to hear that for 2 weeks. Then they got to go to L.A., and then even if they go – when they go to L.A., even if they win, then the very next week they're going in against Oregon. And you can't lose that one either. You're going to be – Ohio State going to be third in the Big Ten for the first time in God knows how long. So I look at that and say, Joe, I could pick four games. USC, for what it's worth, that game may be monumental looking at their schedule. So again, you say, oh, at USC quote unquote sucks, even though you and I don't believe that. They don't. So we look at that and say, well, Joe, what if they're a one-loss team? What if Ohio State's a one-loss team? Now what? What if they're undefeated? So I just look at that whole situation and just say to myself, yes, you can say Ohio State, Texas, and where I agree, because of narrative, I could see four games for Ohio State being massively impactful, and if not the biggest game when we look back at the end of the season, the whole totality of it.
I also think that the USC game that you mentioned is incredibly underrated for this picture because I think of not enough people are taking USC seriously for this upcoming year, and I think the timing of that game could also talk about a trajectory I keep mentioning with these games. That could be a swinging point for either USC or Ohio State. I think that game, also knowing their play styles, the big differences, that could be a real moment for Lincoln Riley. That could be a real narrative building moment, either in the positive direction of, oh, here comes USC. They're going to make a playoff this year. Or, man, Lincoln Riley still can't beat any of the good teams in the Big Ten. The next game I wanted to bring up, Blake, and I'm saving you from sounding biased by bringing up LSU at Ole Miss in week three. I think that these lists have been circulating for 2 months now. Jack, our social editor who does a great job posted about this pretty early on. And anyone who's putting out these these graphics, you're going to put LSU versus Ole Miss on there first. Not only is this a game between two good teams, two teams that should be in that 9-3 range. Ole Miss could go to a playoff this year. LSU folks are hopeful that LSU defies expectations in year one and they go to a playoff this year. But if we just remove all that for 2 seconds, we all know why this game is such a big deal. Lane Kiffin has turned this game into the most dramatic early regular season game that I can remember. I can't think of anything that is close to the level of off-field drama as this. And this is built for theater. The way that this whole entire thing transpired and the outcome, the narratives that will be built off of this game are going to be unbelievable. If Ole Miss loses, LSU fans are going to have ammunition to just go after them after all this talk in the offseason. And mm-hmm. then the inverse is if LSU loses, Ole Miss fans are going to feel justified. Hey, we got our guy. We're glad that you gave us the opportunity to move on to Pete Golding and you can keep Lane Kiffin. There's going to be so much toxicity coming out of this game, which is one of the best parts about college football. It's toxicity.
Can I ask you a question? Do you think that this has game of the century written on it because of the toxicity? You know, let me throw this your way. Ole Miss and Tennessee didn't had it to an extent, and they didn't win. Neither one of them were really winning, right? So when Lane goes back into Tennessee, Joe, it changed the sport for about 3 weeks. Neither one of them were winning. These two might be playoff teams. I don't know if this doesn't have – look, I've been saying this. I'm old enough to remember – Bama LSU 2019. I'm old enough to remember LSU Bama 2011. Joe, I'm just telling you, it's got a lot of those same vibes to it. A lot of, look, you call me crazy, but it's got game century feel because of the toxicity that you talk about. So I'm going to finish, but I would love to hear your thought on that. But here's the thing. Okay, with this one. Lane ain't posted on Twitter in 2.5-3 weeks. And yet this game's still being talked about. Lane Kiffin's name still being talked about. Why? Who's talking now? You know, I'm gonna lead off AYS with this at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Pete Golding sat down with the media 5 times in 7 days. You're the one out there talking now. So I get it, but you're throwing Lane under the bus. Lane hadn't said anything to you. You keep saying let it die, and you keep doing interviews with Chris Lowe. So now what? You keep talking about it. You wanted it to die. Well, then why didn't you let it die? You keep talking about Louisville, 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 Louisville. Well, why don't you talk to Chris Lowe about Louisville? So everybody's looking at Lane and saying, Lane's the one. Lane ain't been on social media in 3 weeks. I know who has been on social media. I know who has been pushing stuff. His name's Pete Golding. So in that, Joe, this rivalry has always had high levels of toxicity to it.
Yeah.
I think it gets even worse.
Right. I think that because of all this, it absolutely does. And there's been this back and forth that's been happening with different media availabilities for both head coaches. It's building it up even more. And it's already at an all-time high level of drama and toxicity. The one thing I will say, though, I don't think that we could just fully blindly back this game as being ridiculously good and being like the number one game, because there is still a world that both LSU and Ole Miss play under expectation and maybe have a little bit of a wait and see year, a level setting year, a reset.
Like the playoff.
Well, if both of them make the playoff, that was how I led in. Both these teams look really, really good, and there's an opportunity for one of them to make it, both of them to make it. There's a chance that this game could be the defining moment for one of the teams making it. If LSU or Ole Miss wins, and that's the big resume builder, maybe that's what, if they're down to them as the final two teams, that would make it even crazier. But there still is a chance here, Blake, that LSU and year one under Lane Kiffin is more like an 8-4 team, and they're going through some growing pains, maybe even 7-5. And the same thing applies for Ole Miss, that even though we were high on them in the preview, there is a chance with a lot of roster turnover that maybe they struggle. And it is first year under a head coach who's never been a head coach before that he struggles navigating that. If it's a game between 2 7-5 teams, this could be a little bit of a slop fest. But even if it is a slop fest, to your point, when Lane has traveled and played against Tennessee, it has been super tense. You can feel it in the broadcast. I think that no matter what, this game is going to be entertaining, but there is that slight chance that it maybe doesn't have the same intensity when we look at it at the end of the year, where it's like, okay, this didn't really mean anything, didn't play towards anything. It, not that it didn't mean anything, but it didn't play towards, let me finish, it didn't play towards the college football playoff. Like, it didn't affect their resumes because both these teams are out of contention.
How quickly before Ole Miss people start throwing stuff at him?
That's one thing I've been thinking about is like, what are they going to have to do about his security?
They've advised him to wear bulletproof vests. They've advised National Guard to be there. I mean, I'm being told by my old employers that, you know, there's a strong chance that 20 Louisiana State Troopers are going to be on the sidelines.
If a bunch of people start throwing stuff at him, or how many people are they going to have to, like, they got to put him in like a,
you need
in like a tent or something. I don't know.
No, you need to put up netting. Like you do a baseball game.
Ole Miss ain't going
to
do that, but Ole Miss ain't going to. No, I guess the LSU equipment staff can.
Should on your sidelines. I mean, it is going to be intense. I don't look, I'm just going to tell you this right now. I don't think LSU is going 8-4. I think both teams are 9-3-esque. Okay. Like that's where I think that they are. Could this game boost one of them to be in the playoff? LSU, here's the real truth. The pressure is really on LSU, not really Ole Miss. Okay? The pressure is more on LSU in the sense of that they have to win this game because of everything that's going down. So they got to win it. I think it's going to be big. All right, now I'm going to take you from not being a homer. Notre Dame and Miami has got to be one of the biggest games in college football this upcoming season. Now I'm going to say something. Don't yell at me. This is the premier matchup for both of them. Can we just be blunt?
Like, oh, yeah. Like no, this find me with the biggest game on Miami's schedule. Find me with the biggest one on Notre Dame. No, okay, everybody agrees.
Okay, I'm glad that you agree because I was fearful that you wouldn't.
Because what would I say? What would I argue? I don't mean to cut you off, but like, what would I even argue with
you? Well, you know how sometimes the Notre Dame narrative is, our schedule's not that it is actually kind of tough when you think about it. And I'm like,
I've never said that on this show. I have always countered when you have acted like that Notre Dame does not
their schedule is soft. I mean, his schedule is soft. However, Miami getting in the playoff and rolling to a national title, this rivalry going as back as far as it is, both of them need this. I mean, look at the playoff at the end of the season. Bottom line. Both of them are going to need to take this one. So I'll kick it over to you. I mean, Joe, it's going to be because this has massive playoff implications written all over it.
That is obviously the biggest part with this. And talk about toxicity. Everything that went down at the end of the year where we're leading up to that final rankings reveal and Notre Dame fans felt super, super comfortable and they were standing with the high ground, shouting down at the Miami fans, only to get completely pulled out from under from and thrown all the way back down out of the rankings. And that little inception point created so much. It reinvigorated what was one of the best rivalries in the 80s and 90s when they used to play one another. Mm-hmm. Them playing one another was a national championship defining matchup during the regular season. If you beat one or the other, it would usually set up a national championship for either program.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like that finally came back, Blake, when that whole argument, that all that debating that was happening at the end of the year transpired. And I tell you what, I was at the Notre Dame-Miami game last year, and it was so tense in that stadium. There were a lot of Notre Dame fans there, but it still felt like there was just really palpable, thick. There was a very like thick air about the stadium. And that's not just the humidity in Florida. You kind of felt like something was different about that game because both teams wanted it so badly. So I agree with you on that for both sides, that both teams will need it to bolster their resumes. There's a really strong chance that I would argue with the easiness of both of these teams' schedules that they'll be undefeated coming into the game. And then the winner of this game could end up propelling themselves to the number one team in the country, depending on who's ahead of them. Probably won't happen, but it could launch somebody into the top two or three at the very least. What?
I don't think either one of them does, unless Notre Dame or Miami blows one of these teams out. Like, let's say Notre Dame blows out Miami. They're not. Let's say Miami blows out Notre Dame. They're not. I don't think either one of them deserve to have the number one overall seed.
Well, it would just depend on.
What if
theoretically all these teams that have better, that are better teams, but have harder schedules, what if they all have a couple of losses?
My point. I think you got to stop rewarding soft schedules. I do.
We've seen that not happen in the past.
But that's my point. It's legitimately my point. So to what you just said, that's probably what's going to happen. Okay? It's not what should happen. Regardless. Yeah, I mean, look, Notre Dame fans are pissed off about this. They want their lick back. You were slotted in the playoff the entire time. And then, look, I agree that the game on the field should have mattered. You know, we yelled and argued about this all during the season. You play the game, the game's got to matter, okay? But Notre Dame has an argument here. Then why did you put us behind them in the first place? It's like the whole situation where one team's got another loss. And what's your point? They played on the field. And by the way, Miami had the same amount of losses. They had two losses, so did Notre Dame. This is exactly what Notre Dame needs to. They need this. As there's a changing landscape around college football, you need somebody that's going to say, we'll play you anytime, anywhere, any place. And that's Miami. And that is what a true rival does. Miami's in a unique situation, too, where they need the highness of Notre Dame football because of also their weak schedule. Joe, I don't know if you saw this again today. Chris Del Conte asked again about the whole Texas Notre Dame thing. And so
how did we get to this?
No, I'm just saying, but this is what this does. It continues to build this rivalry in game with Miami and Notre Dame. And let's just say Chris Del Conte does cancel it for whatever reason, and Miami's going to say, we're going to be the ones to continue to play you. This rivalry and game will build up to be bigger. That's where I was trying to go, that it will continue to do that. This is a playoff eliminator or a one seed eliminator, whatever you want to call it. And so I think because of the rivalry, convicts versus Catholics, Notre Dame gets to try to get their lick back, and can Darian Mensah and company go in there and win, be a big question mark.
And I think that for both these programs, there's been, before their individual national title runs, there were questions on if Cristobal and if Marcus Freeman could win the big games.
And both of them were in back-to-back national titles.
Well, I know. That's the craziest part about this, is that they both acted like the opposite in different seasons. And what I mean by that is that Notre Dame loses the inexplicable game against Northern Illinois. They rebound. They bounce back. They go on the trajectory run to get to a national championship. They proved that just because they had one bad loss on the resume, that they were still capable of being one of the best teams in the country. Miami, not the same, but similar, where two inexplicable losses in the middle of the year to ACC opponents that were kind of mediocre, and they bounced back and they showed, hey, we still have what it takes. They're both examples of the modern day 12-team playoff working in favor of allowing some of the best teams to still get there, even if they struggle in the middle of the year. And it's funny how that worked out that way, that they were the two early examples of those types of teams going on a run. I'm excited for this because I think both these teams are on that path towards becoming premier, or not, that's a bad way. I was going to say premier brands, mainstays at the top of rankings for the next 10 years, assuming that their coaches are still there.
Do you think both of them need this? Because I'm to the point where, can I get, look, here's just an opinion. I don't even know if I completely believe this yet, but let me give you a little bit of an opinion before we move on. I think because of what's happening with the playoff, I think because of what ESPN's stance is, like, even if Texas Tech, by the grace of God, goes undefeated, I don't think they get a bye. I think that they're actually, and ESPN's going to force this, I think ESPN's going to really enforce getting big brands in up more top if you had a tougher strength of schedule. I really believe that. Like, I 1,000% believe that, and I don't even know if I've completely thought that process out. But, Joe, what are people complaining about the most? Teams getting blown out. You and I both know Notre Dame should have been in there over those other two teams.
Yeah.
That's not a debate, okay? And so I just think that both of them desperately need this one just for playoff implications. And even if Notre Dame or Miami is to win by three, you look at it and say, okay, those are two playoff teams. Definitely two caliber playoff teams. So I think it's a dog eat dog. Like, we need this one. We desperately need this one.
I think that they desperately need it, but both teams obviously still get into the playoff.
I agree.
They whoever loses this game.
I don't say that they wouldn't, but you get my point of, like,
yeah,
going up against Ohio State versus going up against the group of six team is a massive difference.
Right.
It's a massive difference. Right. You desperately need it. All right. Let's get into it here. All right, before we get out of here, Joe, we continue on our path of diving deep into teams. And let me start it off with this. As we go to the great state of Pennsylvania, we go to Penn State. Joe, I want to make sure that I'm not being a hypocrite on both of the takes that I'm about to have. This Penn State team has got a soft schedule. A soft, soft schedule. Now, if you remember last week, we talked about Missouri. And I'm pretty high kind of on Missouri. I think they got really good athletes. I think if Austin Simmons comes along, there's a lot that they can do there. And then I kept saying that. I'm like, however, they very well could be a 7-5 football team. The opposite is about to happen with me here tonight. I don't know what Penn State's going to be. Iowa State East is basically what we're going to be calling them all night. You just went 8-4 in the Big 12, and a lot of those pieces are going to the Big 10. The problem is you miss Indiana, you miss Ohio State, and you miss Oregon. And so I got to ask the question. We talked about Matt Campbell last week. He might be the coach that's able to, in year one, be the coach that's pushing for a playoff team because of how soft that schedule is. But, man, I don't know if I can go there yet. What are your thoughts going into the 2026 season of Penn State?
Yeah, I got to be straight with you. This was probably one of the most impossible previews that I have put together notes for, because I don't know what I'm looking at. And I'm not saying that in a way that, oh, this is an absolute mess, this team looks terrible. It's not what I'm saying. They have four returning starters, guys that started at least six games a year ago. This literally is Iowa State, as you just alluded to. This couldn't be more Iowa State if they tried, because they're starting quarterback, starting running back, too deep at tight end,
multiple, two offensive linemen,
multiple pieces at linebacker, and their secondary. There's just a lot of guys that are coming over from Iowa State. And we're going to find out if a lot of the key starters and pieces at Iowa State are good enough to start and to compete in the Big Ten. Now, I give Matt Campbell a lot of credit. His identity and his success has come through physicality. It's counter to what most of the other Big 12 teams do. They run the football really well. Hence why I think that Carson Hansen's going to have a great season. And I think that James Peoples is also going to be a really good player for this team as well. I know that Gabe Burkle's coming off of the ACL injury, but first of all, they got the best tight end tandem in terms of names with Benjamin Brommer and Gabe Burkle, not to mention the fact that they're bringing back, I don't know how to pronounce Andrew Rapoye, I believe is the other tight end that's coming back that had playing experience last year. They're going to try to be really physical up front. They've got a lot of talent at linebacker. I think that they're going to try and punch people in the face with the talent that they have in that linebacker room with Caleb Bacon. I'm a big fan of Kale Brzezina. I think that he's really underrated, as well as Rojas, who's coming off of the injury that he suffered last year, and he should be healthy and back within this group. The one big key for me is it sounds like this offensive line could be super underrated, Blake. I think that there's a chance that by the end of the year, we could be looking at this offensive line unit and saying, wow, they are actually like a top three unit in the Big Ten. They're bringing back Anthony Donka, who was a solid starter a year ago. I was reading a piece by Matt Zenitz and Chris Hummer, who were hyping up Malachi Goodman, who's a former five-star, who's been just unbelievably good, and people have been stunned by how he's looked. And then I've also heard from quite a few people about Brock Riker, who transferred in from Texas State, who is going to be starting in the interior. I believe he's going to be starting at center. There is a really underrated, I guess, to open up this expectation for this team, there's a really underrated possibility, Blake, that this offensive line ends up carrying them, and they end up being a lot better than anyone anticipates, which would have been the general concern I would have had with a team that's transferring in a roster from the Big 12.
We will get to the schedule in just a moment. I was waiting for you to say it for about 10 minutes there.
Rocco Becht.
Hi, Penn State fans. It is the inaugural Rocco Becht take from your boy, Blake Ruffino. So, Joe, last year I took a lot of criticism. I took a lot of heat. I took more criticism and more heat than one man deserves. And what was that take? Rocco Becht is a 60% completion percentage guy in his career. Joe, do you want to know what he ended at?
60%.
60%. I said that Rocco Becht is an 8-interception guy, if not 9. That is his tenure. That is what he is. How many did he have last year? 9. I can't get past it. I can't get past. I do think Penn State has a lot of really good athletes. I'm going to need to see you walk off in the Big Ten, regardless if you're missing the Big Three, with a team that you went 8-4 with in the Big 12, and try to start telling me that you believe that you can do better in the Big Ten. Rocco Becht has insane moments, insanely good moments. Joe, there are times where Rocco Becht is making throws, is getting out of the pocket and making some throws, running with the football, that you're like, okay, this young man has a lot of great traits. However, there are also massive moments where you're scratching your head and you're saying to yourself, what in the Rudy Poo is going on? You have same receivers. You have same running backs. You did talk about the offensive line, but you got 2 starters from Iowa State in there, which, by the way, gave up a lot of pressure in the interior last year. You have tight ends. I get that you're bringing a lot over, and those guys know the system that you're trying to run. You talked about the running back situation there as well. Joe, do you want me to come in here and say that I believe that Rocco Becht, who has been a career 60% completion percentage guy, with a dude that's got 26 interceptions the last 3 years in total in the Big 12, can then flip that and be better in the Big 10? Is that what I'm supposed to believe? I don't care that you're missing the Big Three, because quite frankly, and we will go down the schedule, I think the teams that you play, even in the Big 10 right now, are far better than what you faced with literally a season ago. So, Joe, I asked the question. Yes, I do think, on my notes, I do think their offensive line is going to be underrated. I actually don't completely mind with the receivers you brought in from Iowa State. By the way, both of them combined barely got over 1,000 yards, barely got over 8 total touchdowns. And you're wanting me to believe that that offense, with that quarterback situation, with a quarterback that's got 26 interceptions the last 2 years, who is a career 60% completion percentage guy, walks off into Penn State and changes stuff. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. Now, with that being said, from a record v. record standpoint, is there a possibility that they are better record-wise at Iowa, at Penn State than they were at Iowa State? Very well could be plausible. But, Joe, I can't get over the bad stuff that Rocco Beck does in losing some of these games. You lost to Colorado last year. How? How? You lost four games last season that came down to what? Again, the Rocco Beck special of there being massive turnovers in bad situations. So, Joe, yes, I think schedule-wise it could line up for them. I just don't know if I can buy it. And God bless it. I was the big Penn State guy, you know, last year, and I'm going to get killed now. But there's my Rocco Beck special, as we've been doing the last 3 years.
The idea of Rocco Beck has always been a lot rosier than the actual performance. And I remember last year, it was really, really quite frustrating. A lot of people ignoring the commentary and like, hey, he's not as good as everybody thinks that he is. He's solid. He's a solid veteran starter, and I think he's the right guy for Matt Campbell to have lead his team this upcoming year. He is not Brock Purdy. He's not. He kind of looks like him. He's not Brock Purdy. And I think that's where the big disconnect has been, is that there's similarities in Brock Purdy didn't finish his career that great at Iowa State, and some people thought and hoped that he would eventually evolve into what Purdy had become. It didn't really come to fruition. A couple of the things that are troubling to me, he was 106th in EPA per dropback. That is insanely low. He had a 60% completion percentage, as you said. And I think his biggest issue is the fact that he had a 22.7 pressure to sack ratio, which is one of the worst in the country. But on top of all of this, now it's been talked about and regarded how he's done a great job of involving himself with the roster development and all of those things, but he has not been participating in the spring practices because he had offseason shoulder surgery. So you got a new team and your quarterback hasn't even been available. So I think that if there is something that holds him back a little bit here, as much as Beck gets hyped up, I don't think he is the asset that everyone believes that he is.
No, I just talked about the Colorado loss. Samo had to go for 175 and two touchdowns for them to score points. Rocco Beck, just by the way, on third down, they went 2 of 12. He went 1 for 9 passing on third down. This is not something that is brand new with him. This isn't like, I hate to point this out. And again, I know what's going to happen here. This has happened to me the last couple of seasons. I come out, say, I don't think he's going to be able to lead you to where you ultimately want to go. I get massive hate. Now it's just going to be bigger because it's Penn State that we're talking about here. And I understand it. I've been through it. Maybe as a fan, you should listen, because this is the exact take that came from last year. Joe, you brought up the point of him not being there. I just think that the decision-making has got to be better. Defensively, I actually think that they'll be okay. I agree with your point wholeheartedly. Matt Campbell, even though I hate the way that he wears his hat, is a tough nose, downhill, in your face, gonna go right at you, coach. And that will work in the Big Ten. I just don't know if in a conference like that, regardless of who you're playing, if you can't throw the ball in critical moments and in critical situations, you're gonna get blasted. You keep talking about the Big Ten's the best conference in college football, right? That's what everybody in the comments keeps telling me. Okay, well, if that is the case, then what's going to happen now? Joe, I think this dude could be 55 to 57% completion. I think he could easily get to double-digit interceptions. You're going up against better competition now. By the way, don't say that Penn State's got better players, do you? Because I got two receivers, I got two tight ends, I got two running backs, and two interior offensive linemen that came from the same school. Now what? So we can make all those comparisons and make all those rules and talk about all those things. Joe, this is an 8-4 football team. Even though I do think you're right that their offensive line is a little bit underrated, I still think their front seven is a little bit underrated. I can't go there yet. I just can't go there yet with Beck. And that is the reason him being there is the reason. Can I be honest with you? I think that Matt Campbell biggest mistake was not just pulling the plug on it and saying, we're going to go find somebody in the portal and we're going to start over. And I know you don't want to do that to your guy, but man, what is
the timing would have allowed for them to do something
that is fair.
I think that he's good for what they're trying to do. I mean, he's a far more viable starter than many of the options that are out there. So I don't think that there was anything wrong with that. It's just, there shouldn't be much of a belief that Becht finishes one of the top quarterbacks in the conference and that he's a reason why they do go 10-2. Do you want me to read off their schedule though, before we're coming up on time?
Let's do it.
Okay. Their games that I classified as games that they should win: Marshall at Temple, which is funny that they're going to Temple, versus Buffalo, versus Wisconsin, versus Purdue, at Rutgers. They're tough matchups that I think that they could potentially lose, but are going to be hard games: at Northwestern, versus Minnesota, at Maryland. I think Maryland's going to be better than people realize this upcoming year. When we do that preview, it'll be fun. Toss-up games, and I think that there's a chance that they probably lose all three of these: versus USC, at Michigan, at Washington. While they avoid most of the top teams, I think that with an easy schedule, they still go 9-3. I think we're going to come out of the year and we're going to say, man, that was a really impressive first year under Matt Campbell. It's disappointing how they played against USC, Michigan, and Washington, but they just didn't have enough. I think 9-3 is totally possible.
They're going to lose one of those games in the middle tier. Shit, they have a track record of losing games to 4-8 teams. I'm sorry, some of those middle tier teams in the Big Ten, you're going to get, I don't know, Joe. I hate constantly having to come down on Matt Campbell because I think he's overall a really good coach. I just can't buy into Rocco Becht. I think he's going to throw you into losses, and that's just where I sit on him. Look, before I get killed, I said the same thing about the quarterback that I covered for a season ago on the team that I liked the most.
That's true.
So don't come at me saying that I'm biased on it. I just don't. I don't think you can get there. All right. Nike Doug with a $5 super chat says, Joe, you're great, but your co-host on your other podcast is a giant schmuck. I wonder if he's talking about Ryan or Sean.
He's talking about Ryan.
You got to get someone else, bro. Why? What did Ryan do now?
We did a Oregon preview on our channel, but we're doing it differently than we do it on here. We break down all the draft prospects, and then at the end, we talk about if they're a national title contender or not. And Ryan's more negative than you are. So Ryan was negative on him. And I was arguing with Ryan. I was like, I think that,
I'm not negative title on Oregon. I said I thought
No, just in general. I mean, like, normally when we do the show, you're the negative one, I'm the really positive one. And that's why our debates are really fun. Ryan's not a schmuck, but thank you for the $5 and the
compliment. You know what? Send us $5 every episode and call Ryan a schmuck. I don't think he'd bother.
No. Don't do that, because then I'm going to have to owe Ryan. We're going to have to pay Ryan a royalty or something stupid like that.
Okay. T. Walker with a $10 super chat says, what's your difference of
definition
of not winning that year? Ole Miss versus Tennessee. Ole Miss was 10-2, was a win versus Auburn away from a playoff ship, but Baylor in the Sugar Bowl 6-7 because Tennessee sucked. Because Tennessee absolutely and brutally sucked.
Yeah,
that's what I mean by that. I mean that was their Super Bowl. They were 6-7. I mean they were horrible. It had no impact to a playoff whatsoever, or a New Year's Six Bowl. It had no meaning.
But it was one of the best games that week.
It was one of the best games. I mean, Joe, they're still talking about it. He's got golf balls in his office.
It was a memorable game. I don't know if it was like a great. Like, it was definitely a memorable one because of all the stuff that was thrown at him.
Right. There's an hour delay because stuff being thrown on the field. Yeah. And what are we even talking about? Bam with a $50 super chat. Thank you so much, Bam. He says, Penn State fan here, but I believe 8-4 is on the table. Oh, without a doubt.
That's the floor for me. I would be absolutely legitimately gobsmacked if they don't go at least 8-4.
When the hell?
I gotta get smacked. Flabbergasted, blown away. If they don't go 8-4, there's a serious problem.
Serious.
8-4. I think that they're gonna go 9-3. I think that
it just is gonna mean
coach.
It's gonna mean Rocco Becht threw you into those games, or threw you out of those games. I mean, Joe, what are we? The dude's gonna probably come close to 1,200 total passing attempts. What is going to change? I mean, what? I'm sorry. I just can't get past it. I pray to God that he proves me wrong. He didn't last year. I don't think he will this year either. All right.
Yeah.
See y'all Wednesday. Y'all have a good night. Peace.